And welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers will answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. How you doing, John?
I'm all right, Hank. You know that line from Rushmore, I ain't even here, Sergeant, I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hank, you don't even have to have seen the movie to get the reference, because I previously referred to it on the podcast. The point is...
Is this now a continuation of the intro, where I just say, how you doing, John, and then you quote Rushmore? Like, is that a new bit?
The point is that I've been in Cheyenne, Wyoming for far too long, and I've kind of lost my sense of self, but I can't leave Cheyenne, Wyoming right now, and how are you?
I'm good. I want to tell you a little story about how I was eating a Clif Bar one day, by which I mean yesterday, and walking down the stairs into my backyard so I could go out to my office. So walking down these stairs, there's like four or five stairs. I couldn't tell you how many stairs there are exactly, and I'm eating a Clif Bar. And because I was preoccupied thinking about all of the interesting things in my life and also how great this Clif Bar was, I didn't know how many steps there were, and I thought I was done with the steps, but I wasn't.
Right.
And so about, let's say, a second and a half later, was on my butt, having not entirely sure about the situations regarding my ankles and hands, but feeling okay. And then I look down at my hands, and I'm like, where's my Clif Bar? So I fell down these stairs. And, like, I think I'm okay. I got a little bit of pain in my leg and wrist from catching myself. But my Clif Bar, where did it go? Do you know where it went, John?
I don't. And it better be good, because the rest of the story has not been great so far.
It was in my mouth.
Oh, the whole thing just shot right into the mouth.
I put it in my mouth while I was falling, bit down on it, held it real hard, and then I was like, where did it go? I can't find my Clif Bar. And
that happens to me with my glasses all the time.
Oh, God.
I have a very similar problem with my glasses.
I'm sure at some point during this podcast, I'll be like, where's my phone? And it'll be like, oh, right, I'm on the phone with my brother John podcasting.
Yeah, when I'm under a lot of stress, I do that more often. Like, weirdly, when I'm stressed out, I become more obsessive about checking things, but I also become far more likely to lose them. So I'll become very obsessive about checking that I have my wallet, for instance, but I become infinitely more likely to lose my wallet. I find that there are very few upsides. You know how, like, people often think that, portray mental illness as having secret advantages?
Yep.
You know, like, you can,
that's what we want. We want that to be a thing where it's like, but we get something out of it at least.
Right, like the genius is close to madness and whatever. That has just not been my experience. My experience has been that it's just an unfortunate thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to questions from our listeners. This question comes from
Meredith. Wait. You didn't bring us a poem?
I don't have a poem for today, Hank. To be totally honest with you, I have been in Cheyenne, Wyoming for so long that I do not, I am not prepared for this podcast. I'm just going to level with you, Hank. Like, this is not going, you're not about to experience my best work. And my best work at podcasting isn't even very good.
I've got a short poem for you here. Opaque, metallic, permanent ink. No shaking required to start. Quick drying, fade, and water-resistant ink.
Is that from the side of a Sharpie?
It's from the back of a package of metallic Sharpies, yes, John.
I spend a lot of time thinking about Sharpies these days. This question comes from Meredith, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I've recently begun the process of digitizing my wardrobe, meaning that I've been taking pictures of every item of clothing I own, editing it, then uploading it to a special digital closet app. The only reason I'm doing this is because it is my ultimate dream to not have to get out of bed in the morning in order to pick out an outfit. However, the whole process is proving to be incredibly time-consuming. The irony of the situation has dawned on me. I'm putting in a bunch of work just so I can be lazy. My question is it really laziness if you have to put in work to be lazy? Laziness has always been a part of my identity, and I feel as though I'm starting to lose my edge. Or maybe I'm moving a level up on the laziness ladder? I can't decide. What are your thoughts? Yours in questionable, ironic laziness, Meredith.
Yeah, I think you're becoming next level lazy, which is fantastic. I think, really good laziness Like, if you're going to be the good kind of lazy, you should invest in future laziness, knowing that you will want to stay in bed. Investing in that. Well, and particularly that staying in bed thing, which is so lovely to be able to do that and to like shave a little bit of time off of this like transition into being upright and cold, which is two unpleasant things, to give yourself those five extra minutes. And also, like, I think there's a little bit of like, you like spending time with your closet and doing this and being a little bit like you're in the movie Clueless. And you're spending time doing a thing that you enjoy doing, and also you're allowing yourself to relax a little bit more. That's great.
Yeah, I have an analogous experience with cataloging my home library, Hank. As you know, I've been cataloging my home library since 2007. I've never finished. But every time I have a spare couple of hours, I get on my library app and I catalog a few more books, and I'm ostensibly doing this so that I stop losing books. I find that I consistently lose the books that I most need at any given moment. I can find every book except for the one I need. And so the idea is that I'm doing this so that like future me will never lose a book, but the reality is that I'm doing it because I like cataloging my home library.
Mm-hmm. There's like working so that you can live your best life rather than working so that you can work so that you can work so that you can work. And I understand, like, I definitely have a thing in me where like I drive myself to work hard because I feel like I have an obligation to do like to do the things that I have the ability to do, to, you know, employ people and to create things that people are going to enjoy and you know, Project for Awesome, like make the world a better place. But like there's also like I also have to counter that with some amount of like I am working so that I can like do the things that I want to do and that I like to do, like spending time with my family and traveling and eating delicious pizza and laying in bed for 5 minutes longer than I otherwise could.
I don't know why I'm working.
You are about 3 years ahead of me in your like midlife crisis, and I am already pretty deep in it. So I can't imagine where you're at.
I have no idea. Honestly, Hank, like I have no idea why I work, especially why the last few months I have been working so hard. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hank, I'm going to level with you. I want to underscore the fact that I'm not really here.
I definitely have those moments when Catherine will ask me a question, and then it'll be like a solid 30 seconds before I'm able to answer. Because I'm like,
yeah, I've been like that with my family for like 2.5 months. Pretty consecutively. I know it's been very bad. It's been very bad. But on the other hand, like, this has been a very creatively productive time for me. And in a way, like, that's the only way I can do it. It's the only way I can do it. Like, it's not, I find that, like, I can't really work part-time on most things. Like, when I'm working on something, I tend to be pretty deeply involved in it. And it's really hard for me to be able to, like, put stuff down. But then, you know, hopefully that also applies to when I'm not working, like I'm, you know, present instead of being like half there or whatever.
I feel like we're in fertile ground. So that is maybe pretty deeply unrelated to Meredith's question. But I do want to continue and say that I have been like, there is this thing about writing a book in particular.
Who says that I'm writing a book?
Well, this is what I'm saying about me, not about you.
Oh, okay.
I have to have my head live in the world.
Yeah.
A lot, or else I don't get good stuff out of it. And I've just in the last couple of weeks started to like really apply myself to the sequel to the book that I haven't finished, because the book itself is sort of in a like in betweeny space where I shouldn't be working on it because people are looking at it who aren't me. And so like I want to work a little bit on the sequel before I finish the book so that I like can set up the sequel well. And I will just be sitting there at dinner and like living in the world of the book and having no idea that my mind is in a space that like yeah. an inside of a physical reality. And I like, and I don't feel like I can get good creativity from this other world without having my like without having my mind all the way inside of it.
Right. That's, I call that space Cheyenne, Wyoming. I agree. I mean, I think it's really difficult to get yourself out of that when you're in it. And also you kind of don't want to, because mm-hmm. it's productive. It's a productive space. And for me, like, it's a really, like exciting space in some ways, because it's a, you know, it's a way out of oneself. It's a moment where you don't feel like you're kind of like stuck inside of this self-shaped prison. Mm-hmm. And that's very appealing. But, on the other hand, like, it does, after a while, I mean, this has been a while for me. You start to want to be able to like engage with the world. And I guess for me, like, it's like, if I'm there, I'm never really all the way like in this world. Like, I know we all have that experience of like, you're in a conversation and one of the things you start to notice is like, it's totally possible to trick people. Like, it's totally possible to make people believe that you're really there. And you're like, oh my God, like 99% of my social interactions are so incredibly superficial that people don't know that I'm not here. And I would have no way of knowing if they weren't here or if they're not here. But yeah, I think so. For several of the last months, or much of the last few months, that has been the case for me. And it's nice in some ways, and in other ways, I'm looking forward to it ending, which hopefully it will soon. I mean, the other thing is that I never quite know when it's over, right? Like, whenever you're working on something, you never know when you're able to let it go. Like, I'm always fascinated by people like visual artists who make lots of artwork, and you know, they make more than like one painting every 3 or 4 years, which is my rate of production. Like, how on earth do they know that they're finished? You know, I mean, how on earth, when you're making an abstract painting, do you look at it and you're like, mm-hmm. done? I just don't. I admire that ability to talk about the moment you're finished. Are we still talking about digitizing your wardrobe?
I don't think so, but I think that we got to the root of Meredith's question, and I want to ask a question that's going to bring you all the way into this world with something that you are very passionate about. So you're gonna be here for this one. It's from Sarah, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, I live in Germany, but I will be traveling to the U.S. in a few weeks. Is there anything that I have to eat or drink while I am there? I've already put Diet Dr. Pepper on my list, since that's something I have never seen in a German store. Any other suggestions? Vivere, disce, sed cogita mori, Sarah." I looked that one up. It says, remember to live, or learn to live, but remember death.
Mm, thanks, Sarah. I needed that. First off, I've just found out, Hank, that I can't move to Germany. I wanted to, because it seems like a great country. Hank and I are fascinated by the German way of doing business. What's it called, Hank?
The Mittelstadt.
The Mittelstadt.
Or Mittelstadt.
All Hank and I
want to
do when we grow up is run a Mittelstadt. But I can't move there because there's no regular access to Diet Dr. Pepper. It might as well be the frickin' moon. I don't know. What do you eat in America that you can't eat elsewhere? I feel like we've done a really good job of exporting our terrible diets.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, so first of all, America has like every flavor of chip. There's definitely flavors of chip that you can't get in America. Doesn't tend to be ketchup chips here, which are in other places. Paprika yeah. Pringles are my very favorite kind of Pringle, and you can't get them in America. But we have so many flavors of chips. We are really into chips, guys. Like, we have the weird like indie brands like Tim's with like the, and you got like the sweet Maui onion from the Hawaiian chip people, and you got like weird they also make like a spicy barbecue one, and you've got to eat barbecue chips. So basically, you got to go to a grocery store and just buy the chip flavors you don't recognize. Also, you're going to want to have a corn dog. Also, you're going to want to have biscuits and gravy. Also, you're going to want to have corn fried steak. Corn fried steak? That's weird. corn,
chicken fried steak,
chicken fried steak with gravy. Right.
I mean,
just
to be fair,
in general,
chicken fried steak is also a weird idea if you're not American.
Yeah, but in I don't know. Do they have sausage gravy in other countries? Because I don't think I've ever seen it. And I feel
I don't
like
know.
You just
the one thing that they definitely don't do as well in other countries as they do in the United States is barbecue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to want to have, if you eat meat, I think you're going to want to have some nice pulled pork barbecue. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, so I actually have spent a fair amount of time in Berlin, and I don't know if Sarah's from Berlin, but I thought they had all of the major foods, except apparently Diet Dr. Pepper and barbecue. So that's, also I wanted to say that when Hank says chips, he is referring to the item that in the rest of the world, I believe, is called crisps.
Yes, that is correct. I'm talking about American chips, the way chips should have always been, because they're shaped.
But then it's not just, of course, if you're visiting the United States, you're not just there to eat and drink. You're also there to have experiences. And I guess the main experience that I would recommend, Sarah, is if you can, get an injury or an illness, nothing serious, nothing life-threatening, because what... If you, when you come to America, what you really want to experience is our healthcare system. And I think it would be very interesting for you to just maybe like sprained ankle, something like that, and just get a feel for it. Get a feel for the expense, get a feel for the efficiency with which everything is done, and then go back to Germany just crazy jealous of how well we do healthcare.
Just be deeply amazed. Don't hurt yourself. I disagree with John. I've just looked up the etymology of the word chip, John, because I feel very defensive of...
Actually, yeah, Sarah, do whatever you can not to have to go to the doctor.
Do not go to the doctor.
Just the act of going to the doctor is like $120.
So chip comes, of course, from chipping something off of something else, like chipping yeah. like stone off of a stone.
A chip off the old block, as they say.
I feel like if you're going to take a potato and you're going to chip something off of it, it's going to be more like a potato chip in America than it's going to be like a chip in the UK, where it's this like clearly a sliced, diced thing where it's the long square rectangle thing. I think...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to want to fight and die on this particular hill.
Well, I will. So anybody, just come
at
me,
Europe. I want to yes and you, but I literally can't figure out how to.
Yes. Okay. Well, and also when I look like a computer chip, I got to say that looks more like a potato chip in America than a chip in Europe.
God, all this talk about a delicious American food is making me hungry. Do we have any like fruits and vegetables we can recommend? I feel like we must have some fruits.
Are there like special American vegetables?
Are there mangoes in Germany? It's been a while since I've been there. If you don't have fresh fruit in Germany, Sarah, and again, I'm not totally sure about this, but if you don't have fresh fruit, we do have fresh fruit in America. We have a bunch of different kinds. We have blueberries, raspberries, mangoes. Sometimes we get papayas, not that often in Indiana, but sometimes. So try out some fresh fruit. Maybe it's only freeze-dried
in Germany.
You could
also, you could have some green asparagus, because I hear in other countries asparagus is white, and that's weird. So have it our way and be like, oh, that has different flavor.
You know, we're growing purple asparagus in our home garden.
Well, why didn't you start out telling me that story instead of being like, I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming, Rushmore is great, and you're terrible.
I didn't say you were terrible. I do think it's weird that you haven't rewatched Rushmore when it's clearly one of the best movies ever made. Let's move on to this question from Natalie, who writes, is it toothbrush water and then toothpaste, or is it toothbrush, toothpaste, and then... water. I've been having this debate actually with my 7-year-old child.
Toothbrush, water, toothpaste. I do toothbrush, toothpaste, water.
Unfortunately, that's incorrect.
But then the toothpaste doesn't get any water on it.
Oh no. Yeah, that would also be an issue because the correct order is toothbrush, water, toothpaste, water. And you have to remember to turn off the water between each of those things, which is the debate that I'm currently having with Henry. Mm-hmm. Henry's a big believer that you turn the water on and then you leave it on until the end of time.
Yeah, Well, we could does Uncle Hank need to give a lesson in environmental sustainability?
Well, I mean, I was kind of having this debate with Henry about, you know, like what amounts to a couple of cups of water. And then he reminded me that I recently taught him that the water that comes out of our sprinklers is the same as the water that he drinks. And he just thought that was ludicrous. He was like, but why would you pour that water on grass? And I was like, yeah, no, you're not wrong. But you still, I don't know. waste is waste. I don't know. Henry is getting to that age now, Hank, where he can kind of successfully debate me, you know, like where occasionally he wins.
Yeah, you're like, you know, you're right. We're just dumping that onto the literal ground. So maybe you can just leave the water running. Fine, child. Oh, yeah. Man, that's something. Right now, my son can debate me in exclusively one way, by punching me in the face and ripping my glasses off, which he does regularly.
I feel like he doesn't punch you in the face when he's angry. Like, he doesn't know about punching to be angry. He thinks it's cute or something. I don't know. What do 7 months-olds actually think about?
He definitely is thinking about something. Like, if we take him to a new place, you can't get him to interact with any person because he's like, what is all of this? What is this room? What are these shapes? What is this movement? What is that color? Which is great to just like watch his like little brow furrow up and be like, this is all very new. I'm not so sure about it. This is a room I haven't been in before. Is that a good baby voice?
yeah, that was a good baby voice. That sounded just like Alec Baldwin in Boss Baby.
Is Boss Baby a movie?
You didn't see the movie Boss Baby?
Turns out, no. Is it as good as Rushmore?
No, it is not. It is not as good as Rushmore. However, I am friends with the author of the book, Boss Baby, and the book is amazing. Have you read the book at least?
No. No, John.
All right. So the book, well, I mean, you would read it with your tiny little baby.
Oh,
I don't know if you and Orin are reading books yet, but I'll send you the book version.
I was thinking of like a 600-word novel, Boss Baby. Audible.
It's a lovely picture book, and it is hilarious. It's like it basically imagines that, you know, like a baby in their role as like the boss of the family. It's very very freaking cute. Yeah, so anyway, we still read Boss Baby in our family sometimes. It's one of the very few books that you will find on Amazon that is an average rating of 5 full stars.
Wow, that is not easy to accomplish.
Yeah. So the author's name is Marla Frazee, and she is also really, really just a great, great person and a great author of children's books. She wrote another one of my favorite picture books about James and Eamon. What is that book called? A Couple of Boys Have the Best Week Ever or something like that. I'm going to look it up.
At what point do I remind John that he's literally been talking about Boss Baby for like 2 minutes?
Sorry.
Only because I made a voice that sounded like a voice to him.
It is called A Couple of Boys Have the Best Week Ever. We can move on.
What was the question?
Sorry, I suddenly got engaged with the world. I was very excited. I don't even remember why.
Is it toothbrush, toothpaste water, or toothbrush water than toothpaste?
Yeah, we don't know.
I think that you're going to be okay either way. Sometimes, you know, John, honestly, I'll do toothbrush, toothpaste, and then mouth.
Yeah, and that's not that bad of an outcome, actually.
There's like that first 4 seconds where it's like, there's not enough water in my mouth, but then your mouth has a magical ability to produce water, and then you have it in your mouth. This question comes from Rachel, who asks, Dear Hank and John, do you think Lin-Manuel Miranda ever listens to Hamilton just for funsies? Does Michael Jordan watch Space Jam every now and again? Hank, do you ever listen to your own music? John, do you ever reread your own books just because you like them? I must know, your obedient servant, Rachel.
I like this question mostly because it imagines that just as Hamilton is the most important work Lin-Manuel Miranda has ever done. Space Jam is the most important work Michael Jordan has ever done. Like, oh, Michael Jordan, what do you, when you're looking at, back at your career, what do you look at? Well, mostly Space Jam. Not so much being arguably the best NBA player of all time. I never watched that game where, with 104 degree fever, I scored like 60 points in the NBA playoff finals. That's mostly, I just rewatched Space Jam. No, I do not reread my own books. That I read and reread them plenty before they come out. I don't need to reread them after they come out, especially because I think I'll just see things that I want to change.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. I sing my own songs all the time.
I sing your songs all the time too, actually.
But that was not the question. It's, do I listen to my own music? And yes, I also do that. There's this great thing about listening to your own music, which is that, like, when I'm listening to like a Billy Joel song, I try to sound like Billy Joel. And when I'm listening to like a Queen song, I try to sound like Freddie Mercury. But when I'm listening to a Hank Green song, I sound exactly like that guy. I don't even have to try.
I have to say, I sing your songs more than I like listen to them on Spotify. Because right. They're all inside of my head from all those times touring together.
What tends to happen to me is it will like my phone will automatically connect to the Bluetooth in my car, and for whatever reason it's like, you know, instead of playing for you the audiobook you were listening to 5 minutes ago, here's a random selection from the things on your phone, and it'll be like Mbop by Hanson or like Demolition Derby, one of the songs that I never think about that I wrote, and I'll be like, oh, I would have done this a little bit different, but it's pretty good. And then I'll sing along. Demolition. Well, that's not even me. That's a different guy singing that part. I don't know why I picked that.
Do you ever rewatch old Vlogbrothers videos and
think,
God, I used to be great at this?
Yes. And I'm sure that I will do that 2 years from now. I watch stuff that I made this year and be like, wow, I was really above and beyond back then.
When I meet people at like a grocery store or whatever, and they're like, I used to watch your YouTube videos, I think to myself, like, and I can't really blame them. My YouTube videos used to be great.
I'm really proud of some of the stuff we've done in the last 12 months, but like going back and seeing something I did 6 years ago that I worked really hard on, there's something very different about that, because I forget about how hard I work on videos. And then I'll watch this thing and I'll be like, wow, that was like a significant amount of like thought and time that went into that. I mean, occasionally I'll watch a video and be like, I did visual effects for that. Like, there's like three videos that I've ever done that I've had some component of like superimposing something onto a screen or, mm-hmm. you know, like doing kinetic typography or something. And I'm just like, whoa, I opened After Effects. That never happens.
Yeah, I've never done that. So that sounds like you'd feel good about yourself, but I don't know what that feels like, and I never will. I don't have the talent for it. I have to say, I also go back and watch old Vlogbrothers videos and often think like, well, that wasn't very good.
Right, of course, yes. That is the thing, that I will often go back and watch the ones I'm most proud of, and then I'll be like, I used to be so good at this, but I'm not watching the ones from like 2008 where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Why are we still doing this?
There are a lot of them that were not very good. Even the ones, there's a lot from any year that are not very good. Like, that's one of the things I really appreciate about
our audience,
our community, and the fact that we've been able to have an audience for a long time is that they're very forgiving. Like, you know, people tend not to walk away after one bad video, which is good, because if they did, everyone would have walked away a long time ago.
I don't have very many that I'm not like that I'm like not proud of. There are some, but there's definitely like a large body of middle mediocre.
I feel like you've made some clunkers.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I just think that the tail is like it shrinks there at the end, where there's like five videos I wish I hadn't uploaded at all, you know?
Yeah, for me, that is much closer to 100.
Oh, man. This video of a bunch of YouTubers laughing without smiling. That's good stuff. I went to Los Angeles.
Are you going through your old catalog right now?
I am. I'm doing it right now.
I mean, I might be in Cheyenne, Wyoming, but at least I'm not like Googling my own name while potting.
This one's really good, where Nathan Zed took over.
Yes,
Nathan really proud Zed, of that one.
Still the best vlog brother. Like, I would argue, the five best vlog brothers are all people other than us who've taken over during paternity leave. If anything, maybe we should just hand over the channel at some point. Just say, well, we did our best, but it turns out that, this isn't really where our talents lie. So we're just going to let Nathan Zed and Sabrina Cruz take it from here.
Look, it's not about us. It's about a way of looking at the world. Other people have that. See you later. I'm going to go hang out with my child.
All right, Hank, we got another question.
We're just going to pod. We're going to pod from now on. Oh, God. I like hanging out with you on podcasts, John. And I like this. Sometimes I'm like, man, I wish I could do that every single morning. And then I'm like, but that's 5 hours a week I do not have.
Not only that, I don't think anyone could tolerate listening to us that much.
All right. I'm sure that there are going to be a bunch of people who are like, I would totally do it. And it's like, you don't know what it would actually be like.
You don't know. That's too much. It's too much. But the question, the answer to the question, does Lin-Manuel Miranda ever listen to Hamilton, has to be yes. I mean, he's human like the rest of us, right? I mean, if any of the
How
rest of us had created Hamilton, we would, it would be the infinite jest for me. I would spend the rest of my life listening to it. As it is, I spend much of my life listening to it already. All right, Hank, we have another question. This one comes from Tambi, who writes, Dear John and Hank, for almost a year, I've been planning a trip to California for VidCon for my senior trip. I found out that I have the opportunity to meet you guys on Thursday for the meet and greet, and I'm going to low-key die. Oh, God.
That's going to be
it's
really...
one of my greatest fears, actually, is that someone will die while meeting me. And just the stress of that. Obviously, I don't want to make that about me. That's going to be a bigger deal for you, Tambi, and the people who love you. And I don't want to make myself the center of that narrative, but it's hard for me not to, just because, it's...
You live inside of your own body.
I mean, I find these signings stressful enough without people low-key dying. Okay. Don't low-key die, Tambi. It's going to be okay. And also, now we have something to talk about. You could be I'm the person who asked that question on the pod. First of all, I don't know what to have you guys sign. Anything other than skin works in answer to that question. But also, ever since I've told people I get to meet you two, they ask me if I can get something signed for them. But I know I'm only supposed to have one thing signed, and I kind of want it to be something of mine. How do I nicely say no? Excitedly conflicted, Tambi.
Is there something not nice about saying just no?
Yeah, I feel like you just have to say no. I think actually you can probably get two things signed if you're quick about it and cool about it. But I think you just say listen, I'm the one traveling to VidCon and too bad. Life is full of disappointments.
Yeah, that's the one. Life isn't fair.
No,
that's what you want to say to your friends all the time.
Is Tambi, I have worked extremely hard to try to kill the market for my signature. There are more signed copies of The Fault in Our Stars available than there are unsigned copies. If somebody wants my signature, they can go to eBay and pay literally $2 for a signed copy of The Fault in Our Stars.
Good call. Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
I'm really trying to kill the market for my signature, Hank.
It is dead, John. I mean, it is dead until you're dead. Maybe 50 years after you're dead, there will be some kind of weird secondary market.
Nope.
One of the things, I know a sort of surprising amount about things signed by you, and I do kind of have this brain thing that says someday a signature by John that is has a double scribble instead of a single scribble because you messed up. It's going to be people are going to think that that's rare and pay extra for it.
You know why I don't think that's true is because I don't think that there's some future where my signature suddenly becomes a big thing to have, you know?
Right. That's the thing. You are going to become you're not going to become more famous after death.
No.
You're not going to be no offense.
No, none taken.
That's
no, you know whose signature I still have and was such a big deal to me when I got it was the lead singer of the rap group Onyx. His name's Sticky Fingers. He was on a plane with us once and I got an autograph from him. And I remember thinking it was really cool. And it still is really cool to me, by the way. It's still a valuable thing to me. But there is no way that in 50 or 100 years that's going to be like a sought after signature. And I think, I hope people who acquire signatures really from either Green Brother understand that it's, you know, like, we're not going to be upset if you part ways with that signed book down the road, or that signed ukulele or whatever it is. Like, we get it. We get it.
It has value in that you give it value.
Yeah, exactly.
This question is not a question. It comes from Kyra. John, you weren't here for, okay, for what this is in reference to, but other listeners probably were. Dear Hank and John, when I heard the question from the anonymous homeschooler who had been poorly homeschooled, I initially wondered if maybe it had been written by me 6 years ago and I had somehow not remembered. But then I remember that the pod was not around 6 years ago. I was also very poorly homeschooled. My mother stopped attempting to teach me when I was around 13. I also never took a real history or science class because I was religiously homeschooled. I am now 23 and pursuing my master's degree. I want to offer a little bit of hope to this homeschooler and to others in similar situations. I was lucky enough to go to a community college when I was 17, and there I found many professors who understood when I explained that I had had a poor education and were willing to help me learn. Additionally, Crash Course has been a great resource for me to help fill some of the gaps. There is hope. We can be taught. Kyra. That's just a really nice message that I liked, and Kyra also asked if maybe I could be, she could be put in touch with the anonymous homeschooler, which I think we might try and do. I also had another update on the story of the girl who was born on the plane, John.
Yes.
So we had a long conversation about this, about like how this mother went into labor on the plane and they couldn't get the plane to the ground fast enough that the baby was born on the plane.
Correct. It was a Piper Seneca C or something.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And that it didn't make any sense because it doesn't have a very long range. Like right, there's, you're going to be within an hour of your airport every time.
Right.
So if you go into labor, turn around, you can't have a baby in an hour. Like, it's, maybe it's happened, but it is unlikely. So I was talking to a person who is an expert in childbirth. She's a midwife, has been for a long time. And she was like, I was listening to the pod. And you know what happened, right? And I was like, no, I don't know what happened. It seems very strange to me. Was it like the air pressure pushed the baby out? And she laughed at me and said, no, it was a medical transport.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So she's in like rural Alaska, yeah, or something. And they're, yeah, like, we need to get you on a plane to get you to the hospital because, mm-hmm, you're about to have this baby.
You are currently in labor. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, so they were... I was kind of picturing that they were like, you know, on their way to a vacation or something, like the pre-baby vacation that one takes, mm-hmm, where you fly...
In a small airplane.
In a small airplane to a, you know, Lake Tahoe. I don't know. But that makes much more sense. That's... Okay. So now we know half the story. I would argue that we still don't know the half of the story. And then I guess, no, we do know the other half of the story, because the other half of the story is that the tail number mm-hmm, is not necessarily associated with the same aircraft that crashed.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. I just want to say one other thing in response to previous pods, which is that Abby wrote in to say, Dear John and Hank, I just wanted to share that the saddest Big Bird is in the Sesame Street movie entitled Follow That Bird, in which Big Bird is sent to live with a family of other birds, runs away, and is captured by two guys who put him in the circus. It made me cry as a child, but will always hold a special place in my heart. Just thought you guys should know. Childhood and Sadness, Abby. Which I wanted to read because I watched Follow That Bird with Henry when he was like 3 or 4, and Henry was like, what the hell are you doing to me? And I was also like, I'm sorry, I did not know what we were getting into. I thought that this was going to be like the other Big Bird movie that we'd seen, which was called Big Bird Comes Home. And Henry, the whole time during Big Bird Comes Home, was like, this is horrible. And I was like, Henry, don't worry. The movie's called Big Bird Comes Home. He's going to get home. But then when we were watching Follow That Bird, I was like, you know what? Maybe this time Big Bird isn't coming home. Maybe he's going to be in the circus forever. Like, this is pretty dark, actually.
I mean, Big Bird spends a fair amount of time being sad, but I also have to say, and I don't want to say this because it's going to be hard for me to say it without crying, and I'm going to make other people cry,
okay,
but saddest Big Bird is 100% Big Bird's processional at Jim Henson's funeral, which is a thing that happened,
and it is emotionally
wrecking.
True.
Like,
that is the saddest
Big Bird.
So
this podcast is brought to you by Saddest Big Bird.
Very sad.
The Saddest Big Bird. The saddest thing.
So sad. Really, really sad. This podcast is also brought to you by Next Level Laziness. Next Level Laziness, the future.
It's the future. And this podcast is additionally brought to you by Infinite Water. Just leave your taps on.
And finally, this podcast is brought to you by Hank's Music. Hank's Music, listened to by Hank.
And available at dftba.com.
Or available on Spotify. I mean, why would you purchase something?
It's not 100% available on Spotify, and you want to know why, John?
Why?
Because I'm lazy. It takes extra work.
I'm sure it does. Hank, you know how everybody always talks about like which member of the Winnie the Pooh crew you are? Like everybody's personality is similar to one or the other of Winnie the Pooh characters. I'm always called an Eeyore, I think unfairly. For the record, like I think that it's a bit of an oversimplification to call me sort of merely Eeyore-ish. And I get very defensive about it because I feel like Eeyore gets a bad rap in the Winnie the Pooh stories. Like, you never see the kind of upsides of being an Eeyore, of which I would argue there are many. Anyway, I was just going to say that in the world of Sesame Street, if we're going to like give everybody a Sesame Street character, I would say that you are very much an Elmo.
Thanks. I'll take it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm a Grover myself.
Yeah, I think Elmo and Grover are a good team, too.
I agree.
So I think that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get rid of this Winnie the Pooh stuff and just talk about what Sesame Street character you are. That's way more interesting.
Well, I have a really hard time figuring out what Winnie the Pooh crew member I would be. Like, I don't really have it. Like maybe the owl guy, because I'm pretty pretentious and obsessed with my own intelligence.
Yeah, I was gonna say only owls think that they're owls. With that noted, let's move on to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Hank, what is the news from Mars this week?
It's bad news, John.
It's always bad news
Mars
lately.
News.
Is Donald Trump not gonna get to Mars by 2024?
Oh, he does say things. So the bad news is, John, when you shoot a cell with an alpha particle, it has a chance of mutating and becoming cancerous. And that is the model through which we estimated how likely it would be for astronauts to get cancer on their way to and while inhabiting Mars, being hit by cosmic rays from the sun or cosmic rays from the cosmos. So that's like a sort of accepted model. But it turns out, and we've known this for some time, that, in fact, if an alpha particle hits one cell, the chance of cancer, not just in that cell, but in the cells surrounding that cell, goes up. And we have some ideas about the mechanism of how this might be. It's sort of like it creates chemicals that leave that cell, and there's a sort of a bystander cell effect. So there is a higher than one would expect chance of getting cancer every time you are hit by an alpha particle. Or in any higher energy particle has this sort of same effect. And so NASA recently took this into account, or a study took this into account, and said that NASA's radiation guesses are based on an inaccurate model, and they say that if you take the more accurate model that includes bystander cells that might become cancerous even though they weren't hit by a high energy particle, that the chance of getting cancer on your trip to Mars, while you're on Mars, and your trip back doubles
from if you just stayed on Earth.
No, doubles from if you didn't
take into account that effect.
Yeah, doubles from our previous estimates.
But it was already higher than if you just stayed on Earth.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And but now it's higher than that.
It's higher than we thought. It is higher than higher.
Is there a sense of how high it is?
Yes. I don't know exactly what that is, though.
Okay.
In general, like, your chance of death from a mission to Mars is much higher from accident than from cancer. And also, the cancer will come later. So that's something. Astronauts are already risking their lives in tremendous ways. But especially if you consider a long-term kind of like program of going to Mars regularly or people inhabiting Mars, there has to be solutions for the cosmic ray problem. And we've got some ideas, but they are at the moment just ideas. And
is there any way we could just, I would advocate for curing cancer.
Sure, that's one. Just cure every type of cancer. I also am pro that. Interestingly, that is not easy to do.
Of course. Yeah, no, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that issue. It seems like there's a lot of parts of going to Mars that are hard. And I, for one, am glad to be right here on Earth with our sweet, sweet atmosphere. Speaking of Earth, it is home to the greatest third-tier English soccer team the world has ever known, AFC Wimbledon. Well, Hank, the news from AFC Wimbledon is, as you know, we lost our goalkeeper, James Shea. He was released at the end of the season. There's a 16-year-old goalkeeper on Wimbledon's squad at the moment, Joe Bursic, but he as well looks to be moving on. It looks like he might join Crystal Palace, a Premier League side. I don't think he'll be playing for their first team to start, but very exciting for him. I mean, you always want to go to the Premier League.
How many 16-year-olds are there in the Premier League or just in soccer in general? Like that seems very young.
There are a lot. Like, it's any 16-year-old who plays soccer could be on a Premier League youth squad. But yeah, okay. He's a very promising prospect. And AFC Wimbledon have done a great job developing goalkeepers in general. Also, Tom Elliott is moving on, it would appear, probably to second-tier Millwall. So that's great for him. Unfortunately, we don't get any kind of transfer fee for that because he will be out of contract at the end of the month. So there's no like financial benefit to AFC Wimbledon. That means that we don't have a goalkeeper and we have one fewer strikers, which is not like an ideal situation. But Neil Ardley has shown an ability to bring in great players, and we just got to keep our fingers crossed that we've got some people coming in.
Oof! I mean, are you guys in a better financial situation because you're in the better tier, or have you gotten some money for all these players that you're sending off?
If Joe Bursic leaves, I think there will be a significant transfer fee. And then, yeah, that's part of, yes, the short answer is yes. And the club is in a better financial position from what I understand. But it's always going to be one of the, I mean, it's definitely still one of the smallest clubs in League One. And so that comes with a lot of challenges. But never bet against AFC Wimbledon. If I've learned anything these last few years, it's that. So hopefully it'll all work out. I'll tell you what, Hank, we could get into the Premier League for a tenth of what it would cost to get to Mars.
I mean, hopefully less than that.
Yeah, actually, probably less than that. I think that would be an interesting proposition for NASA, though. Just be like, listen, guys, this Mars stuff, it's very complicated. It's going to be extremely challenging. Why don't you just take 10% of your Mars budget and toss it right into AFC Wimbledon and see if some magic happens?
I mean, that is a certain kind of magic, John.
All right, Hank, what did we learn today?
We learned that barbecue is the great American flavor.
It's true. It's true. We learned that John wasn't really here most of the pod.
We learned that Boss Baby is a really great movie, almost better than Rushmore.
No, I did. The book. The book is good. Everybody buy the book. And lastly, we learned that Michael Jordan's most important work is Space Jam.
Of course it is. Congratulations to Michael Jordan on his great work on Space Jam, by the way.
And also to
Alec Baldwin on his great work on Boss Baby, which I'm sure he looks back on as his most important work as well. This podcast is produced by Rosianna Hall, Rojas, and Sheridan Gibson. It's edited by Nicholas Jenkins. Our social media manager is Victoria Bongiorno.
Oh, our music is by the great Gunna Rola.
You take over, John.
Follow us on Patreon at patreon.com/DearHankAndJohn or on Twitter at Hank Green or John Green. Thanks to everybody for listening, Hank. Thanks for potting with me. And as we say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.